Now turn to part two. Read the instructions. You have 2 minutes to read the sentences.
My next guest famously took on the cigarette industry in the 1970s. Now the enemy he has in his sights is our daily sugary treat. He says that the food industry is hijacking the brains of millions of people and making them overweight. David Kester, you are very, very welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, for you, in a sense, it started on the Oprah Winfrey show. You weren't actually on, you were watching it. What was it that got you onto the subject of obesity and overeating?
I was watching the Oprah show one night, and she had on a woman. Here was a woman who was successful in every aspect of her life, well-educated, well-spoken. And that moment when she said, I eat when I'm hungry, I eat when I'm not hungry.
So there's no passion.
I was trying to listen and listen as a physician, as a clinician. What was I hearing? Why was this woman doing what she didn't want to be doing, but she was doing it anyway? And it was that journey over the last 7 years, trying to understand the science.
So, I mean, was it the first thing that popped into your head, it must be some kind of addiction, given your history, for example, with the tobacco industry?
You know, it's interesting. That's not where I went. I thought I was going to end up in the world of metabolism, of endocrinology, of energy balance. That's where all the physicians and my colleagues went and have studied obesity before. But where I ended up, it was not the place that I thought. I ended up with what makes us human. Pick a favorite food of yours.
Kit Kat.
Okay, they're here.
Right,
they're right in front of it.
Okay. Yeah. I'm imagining they're actually not. But I did have one earlier.
But they capture your attention. And those little Kit Kats, have such power. Why is that? Right? What color is that Kit Kat?
Red.
Right. So for you, it's that red wrapper. That has certain significance to you because you, based on your past learning, past memory, past experience, you're getting cued. That wrapper cues you. Your brain gets activated. You get aroused. There is that focused attention. All those other candies in that counter,
yeah.
Do you pay attention to them?
No.
No, just that Kit Kat.
Yeah.
What's the most salient stimuli? It could be alcohol. It could be tobacco. It could be illegal drugs. It could be sex. It could be gambling. But what's the most socially acceptable salient stimuli in our environment?
It's food.
And what's at the core of that food? Fat, sugar, and salt. If I had a vanilla milkshake here, we did the science experiment. What is it in that vanilla milkshake that drives wanting, right? What do you think it is? You think it's the sugar? You think it's the fat? You think it's the flavor?
Presumably it's a combination of them all, isn't it? Or right. Is it?
Sugar is the main driver. Hmm. But when you add fat to it, it's synergistic. I used to think I was eating for nourishment. I was eating for satisfaction. I'm eating for self-stimulation. My brain is being aroused. And what's been the business model of the global food company? To take fat, sugar, and salt, put it on every corner, make it available 24/7, certainly in the States.
Are you suggesting that it, in this sense, is mimicking the tobacco industry?
Got to be careful. There are similarities, but there's differences. Let's start with tobacco, nicotine. Mm. Nicotine is a moderately reinforcing chemical. The images that it was cool or sexy. So what did we end up? We took a reinforcing chemical and we end up making it into a highly addictive product. What's very interesting, it's not only the processing of food, it's not only the layering and loading of food. And the other thing we did in the States was we took down any boundaries on eating. We now eat all the time. We used to eat at meals. Now we increasingly snack and we eat throughout the day.
You write about a man and a scientist called Drewnowski who did an experiment. Tell me about that experiment. It's very interesting.
Well, that experiment had to do with finding the optimal bliss points, that moment of pleasure.
Drewnowski, go back to Drewnowski, the scientist and the experiment.
Optimal combinations.
Okay.
Optimal combinations can create very powerful stimuli. So he showed how when you add sugar and fat together, it's synergistic.
Now, you are a tall, slim gentleman, but I gather you've always been tall, obviously, since you were an adult, but you weren't always slim.
I have suits in every size.
Because you have changed, your girth has changed over the...
I've gained and I've lost my body weight many times over, and I didn't understand why it's so hard. Now that we have the science, I am much more empathetic when I see people who have a hard time controlling their weight.
So how did you reduce? How did you get down to the suit size you're wearing at the moment?
Then I asked one of my colleagues, Gaetano Dicero, one of the great pharmacologists. Right? Gaetano shows that brain dopamine gets elevated. What's brain dopamine? That it's not the pleasure. Brain dopamine focuses our attention on a stimulus. And we used to think that brain dopamine, drugs of abuse, they all elevate brain dopamine. We thought food didn't elevate brain dopamine significantly. But if you take that sugar and fat combinations, you see these elevations in brain dopamine, and it stays. It's part of laying down that neural circuitry. Our brains are literally getting hijacked. The only way you can change that neural circuitry is to add new neural circuitry and new learning on top of it. There are no magic fixes. Why won't diets work? Diets will work for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. You deprive yourself, right? You'll lose the weight. But if you haven't added new neural circuitry, if you haven't added new learning on top of that old learning, you go back into your environment after you've lost the weight. You get bombarded with those food cues again. Your brain gets aroused. Hmm. And what's going to happen? You're going to gain it back. Hmm. So the only way to change your weight is really to add new learning.
Okay, so what's the new learning you add?
Having certain rules for yourself in some ways makes it easier. Because if I just know I'm not going to eat certain things, then I don't engage in that inner dialogue. But what's the most important way? It's to change how we look at food. You know, but in some ways, tobacco is easy. Food is much harder. I can't change the valence of food. It has to be enjoyable. But this high processed foods, this fat and sugar, what we have to do is decide what we want. Food has to be enjoyable. It is at the emotional core of our brain.
Okay, David Kester, thank you very much indeed for talking to us.
Now listen again.
My next guest famously took on the cigarette industry in the 1970s. Now the enemy he has in his sights is our daily sugary treat. He says that the food industry is hijacking the brains of millions of people and making them overweight. David Kester, you are very, very welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, for you, in a sense, it started on the Oprah Winfrey show. You weren't actually on, you were watching it. What was it that got you onto the subject of obesity and overeating?
I was watching the Oprah show one night, and she had on a woman. Here was a woman who was successful in every aspect of her life, well-educated, well-spoken. And that moment when she said, I eat when I'm hungry, I eat when I'm not hungry.
So there's no passion.
I was trying to listen and listen as a physician, as a clinician. What was I hearing? Why was this woman doing what she didn't want to be doing, but she was doing it anyway? And it was that journey over the last 7 years, trying to understand the science.
So, I mean, was the first thing that popped into your head, it must be some kind of addiction, given your history, for example, with the tobacco industry?
You know, it's interesting. That's not where I went. I thought I was going to end up in the world of metabolism, of endocrinology, of energy balance. That's where all the physicians and my colleagues went and have studied obesity before. But where I ended up, it was not the place that I thought. I ended up with what makes us human. Pick a favorite food of yours.
Kit Kat.
Okay, they're here.
Right,
they're right in front of it.
Okay, yeah. I'm imagining they're actually not. But I did have one earlier.
But they capture your attention. And those little Kit Kats, have such power. Why is that, right? What color is that Kit Kat?
Red.
Right. So for you, it's that red wrapper. That has certain significance to you because you, based on your past learning, past memory, past experience, you're getting cued. That wrapper cues you. Your brain gets activated. You get aroused. There is that focused attention. All those other candies in that counter,
do
you pay attention to them?
No.
No, just that Kit Kat.
Yeah.
What's the most salient stimuli? It could be alcohol. It could be tobacco. It could be illegal drugs. It could be sex. It could be gambling. But what's the most socially acceptable salient stimuli in our environment?
It's food.
And what's at the core of that food? Fat, sugar, and salt. If I had a vanilla milkshake here, we did a science. We did the science experiment. What is it in that vanilla milkshake that drives wanting? Right. What do you think it is? You think it's the sugar? You think it's the fat? You think it's the flavor?
Presumably, it's a combination of them all, isn't it? Is it?
Sugar is the main driver, but when you add fat to it, it's synergistic. I used to think I was eating for nourishment. I was eating for satisfaction. I'm eating for self-stimulation. My brain is being aroused. And what's been the business model of the global food company? To take fat, sugar, and salt, put it on every corner, make it available 24/7, certainly in the States.
Are you suggesting that it, in this sense, is mimicking the tobacco industry?
Got to be careful. There are similarities, but there's differences. Let's start with tobacco, nicotine. Nicotine is a moderately reinforcing chemical. The images that it was cool or sexy. So what did we end up? We took a reinforcing chemical and we end up making it into a highly addictive product. What's very interesting, it's not only the processing of food, it's not only the layering and loading of food. And the other thing we did in the States was we took down any boundaries on eating. We now eat all the time. We used to eat at meals. Now we increasingly snack and we eat throughout the day.
You write about a man and a scientist called Drewnowski who did an experiment. Tell me about that experiment. It's very interesting.
Well, that experiment had to do with finding the optimal bliss points, that moment of pleasure.
Drewnowski, go back to Drewnowski, the scientist and the experiment.
Optimal combinations.
Okay.
Optimal combinations can create very powerful stimuli. So he showed how when you add sugar and fat together, it's synergistic.
Now, you are a tall, slim gentleman, but I gather you've always been tall, obviously, since you were an adult, but you weren't always slim.
I have suits in every size.
Because you have changed, your girth has changed
I've gained and I've lost my body weight many times over, and I didn't understand why it's so hard. Now that we have the science, I am much more empathetic when I see people who have a hard time controlling their weight.
So how did you reduce? How did you get down to the suit size you're wearing at the moment?
Then we asked, I asked one of my colleagues, Gaetano Di Cera, one of the great pharmacologists. Right? Gaetano shows that brain dopamine gets elevated. What's brain dopamine? That it's not the pleasure. Brain dopamine focuses our attention on a stimulus. And we used to think that brain dopamine, drugs of abuse, they all elevate brain dopamine. We thought food didn't elevate brain dopamine significantly. But if you take that sugar and fat combinations, you see these elevations in brain dopamine, and it stays. It's part of laying down that neural circuitry. Our brains are literally getting hijacked. The only way you can change that neural circuitry is to add new neural circuitry and new learning on top of it. There are no magic fixes. Why won't diets work? Diets will work for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. You deprive yourself, right? You'll lose the weight. But if you haven't added new neural circuitry, if you haven't added new learning on top of that old learning, you go back into your environment after you've lost the weight. You get bombarded with those food cues again. Your brain gets aroused. Hmm. And what's going to happen? You're going to gain it back. Hmm. So the only way to change your weight is really to add new learning.
Okay, so what's the new learning you add?
Having certain rules for yourself in some ways makes it easier. Because if I just know I'm not going to eat certain things, then I don't engage in that inner dialogue. But what's the most important way? It's to change how we look at food. You know, but in some ways, tobacco is easy. Food is much harder. I can't change the valence of food. It has to be enjoyable. But this high processed foods, this fat and sugar, what we have to do is decide what we want. Food has to be enjoyable. It is at the emotional core of our brain.
Okay. David Kester, thank you very much indeed for talking to us.
This is the end of part 2 and the end of the listening comprehension part of the exam.